All right, welcome into the latest edition of the That's So Cincinnati podcast.
Where's your enthusiasm?
Textgate edition. There it is.
Oh, there it is.
I was saving it. I was throwing my change up, and you swung early.
That's what just happened. Hit a home run.
You didn't. You whiffed because you didn't anticipate that I was going to come with the Textgate energy.
Just get to it.
There's a lot to go to today. Paul Inger Jr., Jason Williams. We're just going right out of the gate with best friend of the program, Sherry Coolidge.
I'm getting kind of comfortable in here. Yeah. Well,
we have to keep bringing you back as this continues to be at the centerpiece of everyone's talking points across the city, really.
I'll be your triplet.
That's So Cincinnati, sponsored by Sherry Coolidge.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, pretty much. I mean, if you continue to be at the front of all this breaking news, great work with all the text release and everything else that happened this weekend. If you have not seen it, if you haven't seen the text, if you have not read Jason's winners and losers column, I recommend hitting pause right now, going over to Cincinnati.com and reading through all that stuff, because it was eye-opening, insightful, and really interesting, really hitting all heads of the news and the analysis of it all. So if you get a chance, go over there, read that first, and then hit play again. And we'll talk more about it now, because what a wild week. I mean, just have you guys kind of come back to reality a little bit after sort of this weird journey into text Never Never Land that sort of happened over the course of a few days?
I'll defer to Sherry on that.
Yeah.
You know, I have to say, first of all, you did call it Textgate. And, you know, no one really has been calling that. But if Charlie Winburn was still a councilman, we'd totally be calling it that.
Yeah,
he was gate everything.
You got to put a gate on it.
Still a gate on it.
Yeah.
That's it. I am coming back to being normal. You know, I've read all the texts.
Right.
All of them. That's took a long time. Mm. Took a long time. Less texting, more talking people.
Do you feel like you know these people a little too well? I think everyone feels like they know these people a little too well at this point after having to go through all those for you particular.
I would say you do definitely know them better. Although I know them a little bit. I text with them myself, right, about things. And my favorite thing is like their texting, you know, style is I never had to look at the names really, because I just know their style. Like, you know, Greg is, you know, he'll always do the responses with like an exclamation point or the ha ha. And like, you could even see that when like you were reading the texts and, and someone said on social, and this is 100% true, and God bless them all, they actually have great grammar. These aren't misspelled texts and there's punctuation.
PG was an English major at Princeton.
You know, like that's kind of how I text. There's not like a U and an R and like, even there's not even a ton of emojis, to be honest. This is like, these are conversations.
Side conversation.
Side.
Do you judge people that text with bad grammar?
You're asking me?
I'm asking us in general. This is just
it's interesting because I try to use good grammar in my text messages.
I feel like people will judge. I think in our profession, people are judging, even if we send. Like I could never, I try to be precise. I feel like if you're sending to a group, if I have a group text with four reporters and I improperly use like a colon or something like that, man.
Or the autocorrect on a your.
I'm so happy that the Chris Seelbach and PG Sittenfeld found it appropriate to use good punctuation amid the garbage that they were texting back and forth.
All right, let's just go in, huh? So, all right, let's talk since you're ready. You're ready. You're kind of surly today.
No, I'm not.
No, I feel like you are. It's okay. Own it. I'll come in surly too. We can have a surly off. Sherry will bring our sunshine.
Jason stayed here late with me last night, so okay. I didn't have to listen to something on my own. It was very kind of him. I'm super tired, and he stayed with me for a little bit. So if he's tired, I'll give it to him.
And we will get
I've
to
been
that
in a good mood since
very
Friday.
Very odd situation momentarily. Let's start with the text, and then we will get to. That I don't even know what to call that. Let's start. Number one, biggest takeaway that you had, Sherry, from reading through 25,000 texts and all the fallout from it, was there something that stood out to you above everything else?
It's almost taken as a whole. Of course, there's some texts that stood out. And if you read our coverage, you can see what they are. And we might be talking about them in a little bit, but it's taken as a whole. They don't hold back. They say a lot of things about a lot of people. And it's taken as a whole. It's not just saying this one thing about this one person. And there's a lot of hurt feelings out of these. You know, there's two school board members, you know, kind of called out in them, and things about their own council members while they're sitting there. I mean, Jeff Pastor had dinner with P.G. Sittenfeld. And then, you know, 3 weeks later, there's some, you know, not very nice things said about him. And it's just, it's very telling. And people have come out of this with very hurt feelings, I think.
Calling John Cranley and Vice Mayor Christopher Smitherman mentally ill.
Yeah.
Or having mental illness. It's just, it's crazy.
They also show how broken things are. Like these conversations, I have to say, like, I wasn't like surprised, like, oh my goodness, did they say something bad about the mayor or did they say something bad about one of their coworkers? Those weren't, that's not like what they said was the news of it. Not that really they said it, because this council has been divided. They're not getting along. And, you know, I hear it in other conversations beside the texts.
Yeah, I will say the text that you just mentioned, the mentally ill, I have not like out loud gasped reading a story in forever. I can't even remember. Mm-hmm. And it was a literal gasp about, oh my goodness. This is how bad it is. This is how far in the dirt we are with this stuff, where this is where it's at. That to me, what you mentioned, I thought, was the most striking thing of everything that I read between, you know, Sherry and you and everybody else around the newsroom that helped with this. That one is like the one at the top of the bulletin board for me. I just can't even, that's just wow.
So while I was reading them, so I had a lot of gasping moments too, and with my mouth hanging open. And at one point I was talking with Dan Horn while I was like in bed reading the text, and he and I are talking about what a story is going to look like. And I just kind of said some things as an aside to him and this, that, and the other. Now we're kind of rolling through the next day and we're writing, and we did kind of write, and he was the lead writer on it. And I thought he really crystallized like that. This is who people really are when in their texts, that, you know, there's politicians and then there's who people are. And so that story really resonated. But we're getting to that story. And he's like, well, what are some of the examples we want to use? And I was like, well, this or that. And then he remembered everything I had said the night before, because they were all really the jaw dropping moments, like things that they called people. And he had just remembered me saying them because they're that memorable.
Mm-hmm. The gutter is bottomless at City Hall. It really is. And I think we saw the true character of some of the politicians there. And it's sad that these people are representatives of the people and were elected by the people and paid by the people. And that's how they're acting and how they think about their coworkers or other people out in the community.
I want to go through your winners and losers a little bit.
Yeah.
and kind of expound on those. And let's start with, you know, your winners and at the very top. And I think it's fitting that this was at the very top. And I don't know if that was on purpose.
It was on purpose.
Yeah. Greg Landsman, who was the one guy who did something that everybody should do in this situation. Your number one reaction should be, look, I screwed it up, apologize, move forward, and just try to move past it and recognize you made a mistake. Everyone understands that. Every single person has screwed something up and looked back and at the mess and said, what did I do here? And take some accountability, own it, and move forward. And you pointed out he's really the only one, right?
Yep.
That did that.
Right out of the gate, he's the only one who did that. And I really, and not only that, but he had spent months letting people know what was coming and that he apologized to some people. It's funny.
To you.
He called me a name in there in the text, and he took me to lunch one day and said, he starts stumbling over his words. And I was like, Greg, just spit it out. He's like, well, I called you a bleep in there. And I just started laughing. I thought it was hilarious. I'm like, that's why you took me to lunch to apologize. I don't care about that. And, but I mean, that's that insight that it gave me into him that, shows, I think he was sincerely apologetic. Then when the court case was over the other day, he stood there in front of the cameras, unlike some of his coworker or colleagues, and he took the questions, he took the heat, and he said, I'm sorry, it was a mistake, it won't happen again, period. Let's get back to work.
Yeah. Sherry, can you, because you're over there when that breaks, what, take people inside that post courtroom situation of everyone and the scramble and the media and what exactly happened, and were you surprised at some of the potential dodginess or how that all went down? I mean, what happened over there?
You know, honestly, it kind of went how I thought it would go.
Yeah.
Greg had been owning it and he stopped to talk to reporters. There was a kind of like some bombshell stuff about Wendell Young. So now here his attorney is in the hallway. Wendell is still facing, you know, possible contempt of court and or a criminal charge.
For destroying evidence.
Yes. And so he's standing there with an attorney, right? And he's kind of surrounded by people. And then, you know, this person's holding a folder in front of his face so no one could, you know, take his picture. And I'm like, I'm asking some pretty tough questions of trying to nail down some timelines. And, you know, others of us then were chasing the city attorneys down the hallway. I mean, it was a lot of chaos.
Did you run after anybody? Like actually run?
If I said no, the city solicitor would be like, she ran after me. Yes, I did.
I ran after PG.
I ran after PG. I like people showing off their speed and bursts. I like that.
Yeah, I was out of breath. I ran like 5 feet and I was out of breath. PG, can you give some comments?
He's a runner. I believe you. I would say, though, the stunning moment was inside the courtroom. To see them all sitting there and, you know, we knew these were coming. We knew this court hearing was happening. We knew that this judge was, you know, you don't know really what he's ever going to do. But until it's happening and unfolding in real time, you're like, wow. I mean, to see them in there, and they didn't have to come up and they didn't have to like line up or talk or anything. But I had, you know, I'm looking at five council members in a courtroom. That's not where five council members should be. They should be out in our neighborhoods. They should be out at community councils. They should be inside City Hall legislating. And there we, this was a stunning moment in city history. And people are like, what's the biggest, you know, city scandal that we've ever had? And the fact that this came over to the courthouse to me elevated it in comparison of like, oh, do we have drama about MSD or the former police chief? Like, this is like, we're in a courtroom and this is super serious. And they had to be there. They were called there. They were ordered to be there. And there was a grand jury investigation. I mean, to me, that says a lot.
Not something you see very often.
Well, no. One thing that stuck out to me was the table with all the lawyers. And I think I subtweeted it with hashtag billable hours. It was like you could just, that was quite a sight to behold. All the lawyers, they had to pull in the extra chairs. I mean, it's just, that is what this has become. And that's where a lot, the money, I mean, when you look at the money of all of this, that's part of where a lot of it.
There were probably, 10 attorneys sitting there and every one of them were getting paid by the taxpayers except for, I guess, Wendell's attorney, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so, which is wild. So inside the courtroom, let's jump to Judge Ruhlman. Let's talk to Judge Ruhlman here. I guess the question that, I guess, depending on which side of the aisle you sit on, it seems like these days, the question of did he go too far is out there. In winners and losers, you make your opinion pretty clear, I think, Jason, that no, you don't believe he did. Why do you see it that way?
Well, I thought he was really good when he was saying, like, look, you've undermined the trust of the people of Cincinnati. It's going to take a while to get it back. He invoked the name of Murray Seasongood, a good government, a historical figure in good government in the city of Cincinnati, and talked about him and how he met him back in the late 70s. And Murray Seasongood passed away in the, I think, 83, maybe early 80s. And was really a key to helping to implement some good government, helping to clean up corruption at City Hall. So that was good. And then he just kept going on. And he said, all of you should resign. And if I were a voter, I would never vote for any of you ever again. Now, that upset the Democratic Party, and it upset Chris Seelbach, and it upset the Democrats generally, I guess, or at least the far left wing of the Democratic Party in this city. He's a Republican. He's been there for three decades. And we know what kind of judge he is. And it's his courtroom. And he can say what he wants to say, pretty much. And if you don't like it, and I said this in my column, then don't break open meetings laws.
Yeah. Don't be there, right?
Exactly.
And he's a Republican, but, you know, he made this point like afterwards that I thought was interesting. He's like, Sherry, you've been around a long time. I call out a lot of people. He said he called out Rob Portman, Mike Allen, when Mike Allen was going through everything as a prosecutor with that. And he, which is true, right? And that's like, he's kind of an equal opportunity call people out kind of judge. Just, you know, like it or not, like, it's just, it's not a surprise.
And, you know, from my world, we see this a lot with athletes that end up in court getting dressed down by judges, and it's viewed as high profile, and people say, oh, the judge is trying to make a name. No. These judges, for the most part, do this across the board, no matter who's in front of them. Just you hear about it when it's somebody that you know that's in front of them, whether we're talking about
reporters in the room and cameras.
When Adam Jones shows up in court, it's a big deal, right? And everyone's talking about, oh, the judge said this. Judges say that stuff every day because people are in their court for certain reasons. You show up in the court, guess what? You're probably not going to like a lot of stuff that you hear.
Yeah. Sherry covered courts, what, for 6 or 7 years for the Inquirer.
So
you've heard these kinds of things said to regular, everyday citizens, men and women, black and white. You've heard this hundreds and hundreds of times. But it gets blown up when there's cameras in the room and it's a high profile, you know, quote unquote, you know, celebrity or politician or athlete.
So let's jump over to the flip side of the judge. And that's Chris Silbach, who's biggest, you called him, I'm just going to read it. You said, in the loser's portion, you said the biggest troll in greater Cincinnati politics took to Twitter after the court hearing and predictably ripped Ruhlman. Truly sad. I think that kind of speaks for it. Was that even over the top of what you expected? Or, I mean, that, it just seemed like an odd position to take from someone who was just standing in front of a judge.
Well, to me, it showed that there wasn't any contrition there, and right out of the gate, that he didn't think he did anything wrong per se. Really, I mean, he did come back later and apologize. It's just what's disappointing about this is a third term councilman who has a history of just slamming political opponents on social media from the dais. You know, some pretty divisive rhetoric, you know, some bullying. There are people who call him a bully. And for him to come out like that right after the decision was truly disappointing. And I pointed that out there. Yet, I want to say it was predictable, yet I was a little bit surprised because I did think that he would show a little more contrition. But in the end, that is who he is. And he showed himself to be that he's a... he's a social media troll.
It did show that, you know, and I think he did take a lot of heat on social media for that comment. But it did show it's this underpinning. I've heard this from basically all of them, this underpinning of the politics of things. But you're a city council person. Yes, there's politics involved in literally every single thing. There's politics in over the Rhine parking spaces. Like, that's where we were at yesterday. And like, so they're like, you know, they want everything in context and there is politics involved in it, but it still happened and it still was there and the door was open for it. And it's just like, that was a surprise, I think.
Yeah. So potentially, you know, the same way that at the top winners, losers, you had Greg Landsman. At the top of losers, you have P.G. Sittenfeld. And I find this to be the most interesting aspect of all of this because of his aspirations, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, is going to be in the mayor mix in 2021. And we talked about this last week here on That's Cincinnati about... you can already see, you know, the ads against him with the picture of him in the courtroom and all of that stuff being used against him. How much does this and does what has happened and the fallout of it damage P.G. Sittenfeld through the lens of 2021 mayor race?
I think that's still tough to answer. There's certainly... I was talking to a high-ranking Democrat the other day who said there's enough there in those text messages that can be used against him for the rest of his career. I think this person said another 55 years worth of attack ads against him. It's not a good look for him. It's clearly not a good look for him. The big question right now is how is he going to bounce back? He's not really passed the test so far. He put out a statement that there was about five paragraphs, and the first two were very contrite, and then the last three were all blaming political enemies and trying to deflect the blame. And then it's a challenge to see right now. He's certainly backed into a corner. There's 2.5 years. He is a Democrat, a prolific fundraiser. He's got a lot of big money donors locked down. The thing he really has to be concerned about is if this thing drags on, he really needs to be worried about an outside candidate, a Mark Mallory. And I'm putting the column together on just sort of people who could be potential outside candidates, and or even someone we don't know right now, who could come in and play off of that whole I'm here to clean up the mess, the drain the swamp message. This has been complete chaos for the last 4 years, and PG Sittenfeld has been right in the middle of helping to create that chaos.
I think looking back over the first year, so now this council, and some of the council members have things from past years, of course, because they've been on for a while. The entire first year was these text messages. I've written so many stories about that. And I said that to somebody in passing involved in City Hall. And they're like, well, you should be writing about all the good stuff and the big stuff. And I'm like, let's go. What have I not written about? I'm there all the time. And we had two huge things last year, and I hope we never have them again. Kyle Plush died. Our 911 center was a gigantic mess, and we had a mass shooting on Fountain Square. So those are the two big things from last year, and I covered them, and I covered them well. But that's not what those aren't the two big things that I need. And like going forward, there's three more years, a little less. We're talking with a $19 million deficit. What are your big plans? Show me. Let's put this all in the past. Let's go to council tomorrow. Today's a Tuesday. This post's on a Wednesday. Let's go to council tomorrow, and we're all going to get along, and there's going to be some big ideas, and we're going to do some great things for these cities, and I promise I'm going to cover them. And then let me know what this mayor's race is going to look like in this council race. But I'm going to be in the moment now, and then I'm going to be tomorrow and the next day and watching how this all unfolds. And there's a lot of hurt feelings, and I'm having a very hard time thinking, you know, the mayor came in yesterday. There was into budget committee about over the Rhine parking. And, you know, there's a huge divide on parking and what should happen with the Liberty Street project. Like, that's what we did this week. Things that have a big divide and are very, very problematic. And so I don't see some, you know, what we call them kumbaya moments.
Let me add this
over at our desk in the next few days and weeks.
Yeah. Let me add this on PG is that I like PG a lot. I think he has tremendous potential. He had done a nice job kind of turning the corner from a really silly mistake of running in the U.S. Senate race in 2016, even when some very powerful Democrats and donors were saying, don't do this against Ted Strickland. He still did it, and he got his comeuppance for it. He bounced back. Really, this past year, was dominated by the text messages, but I think he did a good job on helping to get the stadium deal done, the soccer stadium. He did a really good job. Sherry wrote a story around the holidays about him basically saving the Over the Rhine Senior Center for really poor, a place that poor senior citizens rely on and need to go to.
Santa Sittenfeld. You should read that story and Google that.
And he's done a good job, I think, on this Uptown Innovation Corridor. He's worked with Cranley on that. He also recently introduced legislation or a plan to roll back earnings tax ahead of a potential bus sales tax levy. So what happened in that is, without getting in the weeds, is that the first step that needs to happen is that the city's earnings tax right now helps to pay for most of the bus system. So what PG did was introduced to say, hey, we're going to roll back. We're going to take that off the books. And then now this can go to the ballot, ideally sometime next year, in a countywide sales tax. So that was a big step as well. But it's all been overshadowed by text messages. And this is, he's kind of aftabbed this whole thing. He had
a
chance.
Is that a verb now?
He had a chance last year to settle this thing, drop it, but he doubled down, dug in, and look at where we're at now. That's what ultimately led to a lot of his personal text messages coming out. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, Sherry, but there was a chance for PG and the quote gang of five or whatever you want to call them, the five progressive Democrats, five Democrats majority. There was a chance for them to settle this case, what, midsummer, I think, last year. Yes. And instead, they had one of their friends file a lawsuit seeking text messages and emails from other council members. And so
trying to
make it political. And one of those was Christopher Smitherman. And that, to me, is really where this thing went off the rails and led us up to last Thursday and all the crazy, gossipy, salacious text messages that came out. This was really of PG's doing. And he's, again, like I said, he's got to find a way to bounce back from it. It would probably help him to do some basic things like apologize to Christopher Smitherman for the one text message, be a little more clear on the fact that he's contrite. You know, he did come out and say he was sorry for breaking the open meetings law. But as Sherry and I were sitting there talking to him, that wasn't originally what he came out and did in his original statement. But then Sherry and I called him up later that afternoon on Thursday, March the 7th, and we just started really pushing him. And we were asking tough questions. That's what I mean. I wasn't pushing him to say anything. We were asking tough questions. And at that point is where he really clearly said, I'm very sorry for it. I own it.
And I believed him.
Yeah. And he said, he said, hold me to this. This isn't going to happen again, and hold me to it.
You mentioned Christopher Smitherman. So let's take it forward now, and then we'll wrap up here. Sherry, what's
there was your a stunning moment yesterday.
What's your reaction when this shows up?
So what happened is, if you look at like the main text message that really a lot of people were talking about out of everything, was, you know, a text message that was pretty political in nature. You know, Christopher Smitherman had gone on the Bill Cunningham show. This is in January of 2017. Really, you know, kind of called out PG and some of the first shots of probably what
2018,
right. Yeah. And the first shots of what's going to be the mayor's race, right? And he's like, I'm going to come for you. And it's like, oh, this race is starting now. And we said that kind of at the time. And after that, then PG and Chris Seelbach texted amongst themselves. And, you know, they really thought it was a political statement. It was politics was running through that. They do mention Christopher's wife, Pamela Smitherman, who was gravely ill and has since died of cancer. And that is like, it's like a text message that leaked out. A couple of them, we heard rumors that they existed for a long time. And this one was there. And, you know, you could read it for what it was. Some people saw it as less benign than we had heard. And some people thought that it was, you know, just as egregious as everything. You have to read it yourself. And so that was like a big takeaway out of everything last week. And again, Pamela Smitherman, she died this past January. And last night, you know, 5 days after everything, Christopher Smitherman released audio of his wife before she died, chastising PG. It was very, very, very hard to listen to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, her voice is halted. And I had an opportunity to speak to her a lot in the months before she passed away. And she definitely, you know, her mind was there, but her body was ravaged by cancer. It was so hard to watch. She was just frail and thin and terrible, five children. It's not anything you ever want to see. But at one point during all of this, with rumors of this text swirling around that they had this conversation, she just let PG have it in an audio recording, and Christopher and released it last night.
Is this, I mean, Jason, is this just too much?
Yeah.
Is this just all too much?
It's,
why
it's
are we
really,
going
really,
here?
It's really hard to, well, I'll say this. People grieve and they, you know, grieve in different ways. And, Mr. Smitherman called me yesterday, and this has been Monday, and you know, he was really insistent on this is not political, that this was really, really deeply hurtful to Pamela, to him, to his family, their kids. And I know he said that to Sherry many times as well. And it's interesting to think. I think it is. There is. It's weird. Like, I do think there's some politics involved. But even more than that, it's personal. It's deeply personal. So maybe in some ways it's not political, but it is certainly personal. And it's really hard to try to get your arms around. I'm kind of at a loss for words, to be honest, because it's just it's something I've never seen. Sherry's been covering this way long. I've never seen anything like this.
I wrote the words like deathbed recording, and I was like, you know, the last thing I remember about Pamela Smitherman was her amazing funeral that was so inspirational. It's the kind of funeral, like 5 hours, and you walk away from it and you're like, I hope somebody in my life would say some these kind of things about me someday. And she was even more amazing than I knew she was. And you just, you walk away from something that's one of the saddest moments with such hope that people can change the world and make an impact. And that is, that resonated with me. And then, you know, this audio last night is not the last things we want to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
there's deep pain there. It's regardless of, you know, there are a few politicians, and I think Sherry could attest to this, not to put her on the spot, but there are a few politicians around here anyway, who are as brutally honest, and you know where you stand with them, as Christopher Smitherman. And he's a person that when he tells you something, you're apt to take him at his word, because he sort of just throws it out there, and this is who I am, and I'm not afraid to say it, and I'm going to just tell you, and you kind of know where you stand. Whereas PG talks to you in talking points a lot, and sometimes you don't know where you stand. That said, when he was insistent on this not being political, even in his heart, if he believes it's not political. Coming from the someone who observes this, and it's hard not to see. I guess that's what I'm trying to say, is it's hard not to see it that way, at least a little bit. It's hard not to view it as being at least a little bit political.
No, I agree. And that's certainly the reaction today from everybody, from really supporters who even understand, as Jason is saying, where his heart is, to the detractors or people. It's pretty stunning. It's, you know, you might have opened your mouth and gasped with some of the text messages, but this is really like stunned into silence kind of thing.
Yeah, I totally agree. Where it's funny, I mean, you said having to write deathbed recording. It's like, you can't even like really get, it's hard to even know what to talk about with it. Cause it's just like, well, that's, it's a thing.
Yeah.
And it's relevant because it's being made relevant.
And I do feel like it's relevant politically.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say that out loud, but I do feel like, because people are like, why did you publish this? Because I feel like this happened. And I think it's going to be relevant in the months to come as something that did happen. And so that's why we wrote about it. And I want people to be able to see it and hear it for themselves. I hope people think I wrote it fairly with, you know, both sides. PG did not respond to it. I don't know how you would, to be honest. Yeah. And it did drop overnight, very late at night. And so I feel like it's part of the political conversation, which is why we decided to write it.
Yes.
Yeah. And kudos to you on having to do that, because that's a new one. There's no J school class for that one, you know, where they, but it's write the news, right? I mean, at a certain point, no matter how crazy it is, and you're well versed in having to write crazy, at this point, and you write the news.
That's because I covered courts, right? Not because I cover counsel.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. But, anyway, kudos to all the work that you've done throughout this process. I know it's been insane, and you read all 25,000 text messages. So God bless your heart.
Thank you.
So, and thanks for joining us, this
week. Wait, real quick. What's the biggest takeaway? call me.
Yeah. Exactly. You'd rather talk on the phone anyway.
That's right.
Which I still find, I'm still kind of a little shocked by. I'm a texter. So
Jason and I talk on the phone. We're on the phone all the time. And
you guys are trying to avoid liability.
Some of the times we're on the phone with each other. We're like two old biddies, kind of, huh?
We kind of are. So as a gossip columnist, that's where, I talk on the phone to get a lot of my gossip for my columns. So.
I'm positive.
He's throwing shade. Yeah. Okay.
Sherry, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm sure we'll have you back.
I'm having a sense of humor about it because I think it's pretty funny.
Yeah. You're very funny, Jason.
Thanks.
Much thanks again to Sherry Coolidge for joining us. She's totally our BFF of the pod at this point.
She is. She's great. She's a great reporter, a great friend, and has done an excellent job on this crazy texting story. Really, since day one.
Yeah, she's been
it's been over it. A year, and she takes a lot of heat for it, but it's. At the core of it, it is open government, and they broke open records laws, and that's a key. The day that we stop writing about that and pushing for that is, what's the point in, following, covering government? That's our job.
It's the core of us.
Absolutely.
Open records laws is the core of what we do.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So anyway.
Thanks to Sherry.
Yeah, thanks to Sherry for joining us. Looking forward to more stuff to come from her as well. There's fall. She mentioned OTR parking, which is going on. I'm sure we'll have more on that. So keep it all locked, following Sherry on Twitter or just checking out Cincinnati.com, and you can see all her updates and everything going on down there. All right, let's move it forward a little bit. I have a That's So Cincinnati moment of the week.
So Cincinnati. Oh,
Phil, that was good. That was good. Nice touch.
Phil Didion, our executive producer.
Yeah, he's got all kinds of drop-ins now, so we got to be ready. We got to be ready for that. So I have one. Can I get that So Cincinnati again? I like that.
So Cincinnati.
Oh, man. I feel so advanced. This is great. I'm all about it. All right. I feel like after the double So Cincinnati drop-in, I need to have a better one, but I don't. But I kind of... It perked my interest, and I wrote it down in my little notes section of That Cincinnati during the week. And that was, I was pulling out of my neighborhood the other day, and I couldn't help it was a bumper sticker on a car in front of me. And the bumper sticker was literally just a bumper sticker that said Norwood Lateral with the 562 logo on it. And that was it. I was like, who is so proud of the Norwood Lateral that they are going to have a bumper sticker of it and just slap that baby on there? And now, do they love like helpful transportation? Do they live in Norwood and they're particularly proud of the lateral being named after them? What is the inspiration behind having a bumper sticker of your favorite freeway?
Your favorite bypass.
Yeah, it's not even
it's
a major
way to
highway.
Just cut from
at least
75 over to 71,
yeah,
vice
versa. Yeah. It just seemed, it seemed like an odd hill to plant your flag on, you know? But that's why I kind of loved it. I found it memorable. I mean, this guy, I hope whoever it is a listener to the That's a Cincinnati podcast and has kind of got his chest puffed out right now about how great his bumper sticker was.
The station wagon?
That I'm still talking about it. No, it was like a little Acura or something like that. It wasn't anything big.
The woodchuck station wagon.
Yeah. And then the odd thing, not long after that, it was just a weird day driving. I was behind somebody whose vanity license plate just said death. Oof. And I thought, well, that's a bit dark.
Like, just a bit.
Just a bit for, like, what was the vanity license plate guy's reaction to that one? Like, you couldn't just go with, like, I heart pups or something. Like, it had to be death. It just seems a little much.
Maybe that person
for the
owns
license
a funeral
plate. That's what I kind of started having that discussion of why would you do that? Maybe you're a mortician.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Undertaker.
But still, why do we got to put it out there like that?
I don't know.
It had me
Maybe
concerned.
You own a vault company that you.
Yeah, I don't know. It had me very concerned.
Graves at cemetery.
That I would have liked an explanatory bumper sticker underneath that. I feel like you owe me that if you're going to put death on your license plate. What's going on, Cincinnati?
Call the Walker Funeral Home, man.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, that's my so Cincinnati moment of the week. We like, what do you got, Jace?
This is a mix between so Cincinnati, not so Cincinnati, and sort of a curmudgeon moment.
Well, that's good.
So, and I might need some help from Phil, who's a true local beer expert on Cincinnati beer.
Yeah.
And so we're doing this beer, and I guess it's in honor of March Madness.
Sure.
At Cincinnati.com, we're doing the Cincinnati's favorite beer bracket. Mm-hmm. And I look at this, and I'm kind of like, I thought we liked beer in Cincinnati.
You're not happy with the results, is what you're saying.
I'm not. I look at this and I see Taft's Nellie's making it almost to the finals.
Taking shots. And look,
Sam Adams October, good beer, but and I know we have it in there because we have a big Sam Adams brewery here. But I mean, this is my own personal view, of course. I like 50 West Doom Pedal. It made it out of the first round, but then it got beat. Like, that's a good beer.
Yeah.
That I think is probably a final Elite Eight, Final Four beer.
Yeah, I would agree.
I guess what I'm saying is...
You're disappointed in how people are voting. I'm disappointed
in how people are voting.
You like to think that as Cincinnatians, everyone feels the same way you do about every beer and how it tastes.
It's like the Hofbrauhaus Hefeweizen made it out of the first round. I mean, they're... To me, I feel like I fancy myself as a Hefeweizen connoisseur.
You do?
Like, yeah, I love Hefeweizen.
Okay.
It's my favorite type of beer. I think the Moorline 7 Hefeweizen, has, in terms of a local Hefeweizen, is way better.
Really?
And it wasn't even on the bracket. What's up with that, Phil?
It's tough, but the people have spoken. We set it out pretty wide, cast a wide net when we made this list. Did a preliminary vote, and this is what we came back with.
Look, people vote, and that's why we have... You should know all about democracies, Jason.
Yeah.
The people speak. That's how they feel. I'm sorry that they don't share your views.
Braxton,
no one's stopping you from drinking Doom Petal.
Okay.
Why you got to turn on the people of our city?
I feel like I'm being attacked in this little booth.
Well, you know... I feel like you've got to respect the process.
I love Cincinnatians.
Respect the process.
But, folks, there's better beer than Nellie's, Taft's Nellie's.
And look.
Come on.
We are still sponsorless here on the That's a Cincinnati podcast.
Oh, we love Taft's. I love Taft's overall. Like.
So perhaps we should calm down. Taft's Ale House, actually, I will say, it is my number one place that I take people from out of town when they come in here. They're like, oh, I want to go see OTR. I always start at Taft's because it's walking in that place is incredible. I was actually just down in there last weekend.
So if we're looking for beer sponsors, don't you think Rheingeist Truth would be perfect? Truth, isn't that such a journalism thing?
Yeah, they need
Rheingeist Truth.
Yeah, they need a Rheingeist Fair.
Rheingeist Balanced.
Yeah.
Rheingeist Accurate.
Rheingeist Accurate. First Fair, Balanced, Accurate Truth. It's like an offset of the truth community, and it's our beer.
I love it.
If we ever have Rheingeist as a sponsor, we'll have to pitch them this, and then they'll shoot that down and just say, no, just take truth. Which is fine, too. Because we stand for truth.
We do. Justice.
Let me tell you, can I get an update on, I want an update on the duct tape faucet.
Whoa.
That's the duct tape. Duct tape dropping.
How'd that go again, Phil?
It kind of sounds like a kiss at first, which makes me a little concerned.
Well, you'll be happy to know that it's status quo. We're still holding strong.
Wow.
I looked over at it on Sunday. I've been checking up in on just on every Sunday now. And
that's your Sunday routine.
My Sunday routine.
Making sure the duct tape hasn't given in.
It's doing fine. What's not doing fine are our office faucets continue to be a pain in the butt.
Come on.
I mean, we're just a broken record here, but
yeah.
Goodness gracious. I can't even wash my hands. I can't even wash my hands. I'm a germ factory.
Burl, if you're listening and you are tired of Jason complaining about the faucets, I think there's only one way out of this, and that's to get it's got to get fixed soon. I feel
I thought you were going to say, or
Get rid of Jason.
Get rid of Jason.
You've got one of two options. Now, this you might not like how tough this decision might be, but you know, I'm just saying. It seems like you're kind of you're at the point of no return for yourself here. Like this is not going to go away.
Since Burl is a special guest of the show and makes the show happen, our executive editor, don't we have a drop in for when there's a Burl mention?
Especially if he starts thinking about firing you, then that should definitely be it.
How'd it go again, Phil? I feel like I'm going to hear that like one of these days, and it's not going to be in this podcast, and it's going to be Burl coming on saying like, yeah, that what you wrote today is not good.
You're going to come into his office and he's just going to have that playing on loop. It's not going to be good.
No, we love Burl. He's great and very supportive and has our back. And
he certainly does. Yeah. Absolutely. And I'm sure he will be back on again at some point in the near future.
He's a special friend of the
show. We've got some guests lined up down the line. I'm excited in 2 weeks. So the Tuesday, well, we record these on Tuesday. So Wednesday morning, it will post of opening day. I'm really excited for Karen Forgas to join us, who is an absolute rock star that not enough people talk about inside the Reds organization. And has a really unique background. She's got a Disney background that is, her whole story is incredible. Not enough people know it. Mm-hmm. She's a fascinating person that is really impactful here inside of the community. So excited. Karen Forgas is going to join us. So opening day week, Karen will be with us. I'm really, really looking forward
to
that.
When you think about the Reds and how great they are in the community, Karen is one of those people behind the scenes who is making that happen and making the fan experience at the Cincinnati Reds year-round.
No doubt. No doubt.
Awesome.
Yeah, really
next
looking
week
forward
we
to
have
that. Next week
we have Congressman Brad Winstrup. We do try to be very careful about having elected officials on the podcast just because we want to mix it up and you read so much about them. But having Congressman Winstrup on, I think we're going to hear the Congressman Winstrup that people don't know about. Some of the things he's done in his personal life and in medicine as a doctor. He's going to share about that, and I'm really looking forward to that because he has some unique perspective or some unique things that have happened in his life that has helped to shape his perspective in politics and in medicine.
Absolutely. So a couple of great guests coming up in the next couple of weeks, and those guests, you know what those two guests are? They are so Cincinnati.
So Cincinnati.
I love it.
He teed you up on that. Yeah,
I did. And you hit it out of the park. Absolutely. So anyway, so we got those coming up the next couple of weeks. Thanks again to Sherry Coolidge for joining us on That's Cincinnati. And a reminder to everybody, if you listen, if you're listening for the first time, subscribe. It will come right to your podcast platform, right in your pocket.
iTunes.
And we'll be here for you every single Wednesday morning. You wake up on Wednesdays, and we are here for you waiting to bring you all the...
Paul's enthusiastic voice. You don't need coffee. All you need is Paul's voice
waking you
up.
That's right. Absolutely. So we hope that you would subscribe to that on iTunes, any of your platforms. Rate us, offer us whatever your thoughts are in the comments section. We always love hearing any feedback. And of course, send your emails to Jason. And we will read reader questions or emails. If you have thoughts on topics you'd like to see us tackle, send those to Jason. Jason, where can people send that to?
jwilliams@inquirer.com.
jwilliams@inquirer.com. Of course, follow us on Twitter at Paul Daner Jr. and at jwilliamscincy.
And don't forget to subscribe to cincinnati.com.
Yep.
We're running good deals in the last month and coming up. So
support local journalism.
A new day in journalism, and it would be great to have you subscribe to cincinnati.com.
Is it a hashtag new day?
DEY. Let's not go there.
If you'd like to go there, the Bengals Beat podcast for the week is up, and there will be an emergency one coming in a couple of days as people continue to lose their mind over that world. So, hey, you can come join me over there, and we'll go full into the abyss. So, anyway, thanks everybody for listening to That's Cincinnati. We'll talk to you next week.